This is Owen John Collings, interviewed by Chris Alden Lee on the 1st of May 2012. Owen John Collings, Part 1.
I'm Owen John Collings. I was born 31st of the 5, 28. This month I'm 84.
And where were you born?
Born in Paignton, where I am now living.
That's Collins with a G, isn't it?
I-N-G-S, yeah. Yes, that's right.
What do people call you, Owen or John?
John, mostly.
Was that in the case in FIDS as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me about your parents, John.
Well, when I went away to the Falklands in 1955, I'd only been there about a month, and my father collapsed and died. And, of course, I couldn't come home in 8 days, and I stopped. And then mother was home here, and I came back to Devon. And then I was looking at what was the Daily Herald paper. Mm-hmm. They wanted them carpenters for the Falkland Islands Dependency Survey.
Right, we'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah.
What was your dad's job?
He was a mason. Yeah, worked for the council. Yeah.
And did your mother have an occupation?
No, she was just a housewife. Yeah. Yes.
And what about your education, John?
Well, of course, I was educated during the war. Yes. I went to Hayes Road School, which is just up the road.
In Paignton.
And then 1939... I went to the big school when they declared war.
Gosh.
And our school just doubled overnight.
With evacuees?
London evacuees, yeah.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, all right. Yeah, yes, yes. I mean, I was lucky. We had a good, good crowd there, yeah.
Were you a bright lad?
Not really. No, I'm afraid my spelling and stuff like that was not up to scratch.
No, it was mine.
No.
So how old were you when you left school?
I think I was just gone 14.
Right.
And lucky enough, there was a man living next door. He'd have come down from Bristol. And he was a wood machinist for Phillips's shipyards. Mm-hmm. And he got me down there as a... Well, I was a boy labourer to start with, but then I'd done 7 years apprenticeship down there as a joiner.
As a joiner?
As a ship's joiner, yeah.
Was that a career choice or just what turned out?
No, that's what I wanted to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But is that because your dad was in the building trade? Or?
He was in the building trade, but I just thought, well, this is what I want to do down here, I was helping on the machines, but then a place come up when I was 16, to go as an apprentice, and I'll stop her then.
So was there something attractive about working with wood?
Oh, yes, yes.
Can you think what that was?
Not really, no. I just like working with my hands.
Yeah.
I'm better practical than theory.
Yeah.
I can talk about that later on, but... We had lads come down when we were down south, and they got more money than us because they had a city and guilds and they couldn't do the job. Yeah.
So an apprenticeship in the shipyards is worth a city and guilds, was it?
But they didn't do it in the war.
No. Okay.
All right.
So tell me about going to the Falklands for the first time, because when your dad was still alive, this was, wasn't it?
Yes.
What year was that?
In 1955.
And you were how old? When was your date of birth again?
1928. I was 20-something.
27.
27, was I?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I used to come back on the bus sometimes to Paignton and look out across, and I used to think, oh, one day I'd like to go.
You're looking out over Tor Bay, weren't you?
Yeah. And then, as I say, this advert come up, and I went up for my interview.
Where did you go for an interview?
Crown Agents, the colonies.
Oh, right.
Up at London.
Can you remember much about it? Long time ago.
It was a long time ago. No, I think the main question was, what do you want to go for, or something like that? But I passed the thing, and then you're sent for a medical to Harley Street.
Let me ask you the same question again, then. Why did he want to go to the Falklands?
Well, I wanted to go abroad. And that was... I never had, as you say, city and guilds or nothing, and they just wanted tradesmen.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's a good opportunity for me to go.
No language problems, I suppose.
No language problems there, no. No, it was very, very good, because I flew out the first time.
Well, yeah, but do you remember, was the interview difficult, or was it just a piece of cake? How was it?
No, it wasn't too bad at all. I think they were just interested in if you could do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a feeling the man that interviewed me done it when I went for Bass as well, or for Mr. Sloman, I think it was.
Is it Bill Sloman?
Yeah.
He did both, did he?
I'm sure he did, because when I went for the Bass interview, or the FIDS interview, there was a chap called Eric...
Salmon.
And I knew him from the Falklands, he and his wife.
Oh, I see.
So we went in and he shook hands.
So was there a great need of carpenters in the Falklands?
Yes, there was at the time.
Because?
Well, they had a lot of work there. And eventually when I got to the Falklands, there was a lot, well, there's several there that they sent back home again because they were misfits.
Yeah, in what way?
Well, they weren't doing a job, or they was, you know, booze was easy to get, so, and that, and they just didn't fit in. There was several got sent home because of it.
By the governor?
Well, by the, yeah, by the governor, yeah.
And you flew there?
I flew Air France.
And, as far as where?
To we flew to Paris to Montevideo, and then I waited at Montevideo for a week, and then we boarded the old Fitzroy.
Right. Had you ever flown before?
No. No.
It's quite a baptism, isn't it, to fly all that way?
Oh, yes, yes.
What was that like?
Well, it was the old propeller jobs then.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had trouble. We took off from Madrid. We landed at Madrid, and they had engine trouble there. So we waited, and then eventually they took off. And when we got to Rio, we had the same trouble again. We waited, you know. And of course, the plane. I was sitting on the wing of the plane, and of course, he was red hot. You could see it, you know. But anyhow, we arrived in Montevideo. Come the end.
Were you a bit nervous?
I was, you know, because I thought, well, you know, this is...
First and last flight.
Yeah. And it was Air France, and of course, all the crews spoke French, you know. I knew a little bit, Polyvue Francais, and I said something, you know, but that's about all I knew, like, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it was...
Must have taken a day or so, that journey, at least.
Oh, yes, because we went in North Africa and all that. Dakar, I think it was. We landed and then went on to Rio.
Was there a night in a hotel?
No, we're on the plane all the time.
Well, that's, gosh.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I enjoyed it, you know. But then, as I say, we had a week. Well, I landed at Montevideo.
Mm.
Nothing there at all.
Nothing?
Nobody was there. And eventually somebody, I said, you know, what I was. And they said Hotel Pramides. That was where I had to stop. And the airport is way outside. And eventually they got me a taxi. And I'm sure we went around Montevideo a couple of times. He knew where he was going. And they dropped me at the Pramides. And then next morning there was a couple of Englishmen there going down to the Falklands.
So, oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So, did you sample the nightlife at all?
No, the one not. Well, we went in the bars, you know, but I didn't do nothing when I was there the first time, you know. Because when we came back a second time, we knew or what was going on. Like, you know, when we came up on the ship to go home.
The opportunities that Montevideo offers.
Yeah. Okay. Because they used to write it up, what ship was coming in, and of course all the girls would know what was coming. Yeah.
What was a Fitzroy like in 55?
Oh, my God. We loaded up. She was at the end of the jetty. And you couldn't see her, really. But anyway, we loaded up and we had a load of Germans on board. They were going down to work in Port Stanley. So we were sleeping on the floor of the cabins to get us all down there. And we eventually sailed and had all the deck cargo and everything. And all the deck cargo broke loose. All the water come in the cabins through the ventilators. Of course, you know, but we took about 5-6 days to get there instead of 4. It was a terrible trip down.
Had you sailed before?
No. And it couldn't have been a worse place. No.
So you weren't put off by any of this then?
Oh, no, no. I was keen to get there, like, and, you know. So when we arrived, I was met and took to a lady's house, and I stopped there all my time. I was there.
Oh, in Diggs?
In Diggs with her. And then when I came back for a second time, I went to live with her again.
Oh, you know, right.
Because I'd done 2 tours in Port Stanley.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Describe Port Stanley to me in 1955. Was it a sophisticated place?
Well, no, it was nothing much there at all at the time. I mean, the only thing was we used to get a Navy ship come in the summer. And there used to be one come a bit in the winter. But usually it was just the locals there, and you arranged, you know, all the dances, big dances was all. So, no, I enjoyed it. And of course, we had badminton clubs and everything. And we always used to meet the crowd of us, girls and the gang of us, we always used to meet up Saturday nights in the darts and everything and enjoy it. And Sunday nights was the cinema.
Where was that?
In the town hall.
Just the one night a week?
One night a week, yeah.
Were they getting modern films?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, they were. Yeah, they had the Beatles there one night, you know. I mean,
on film?
Yeah, on film. Yellow Submarine or something it was, many, all day years ago.
Hard Day's Night?
Don't know which one it was, but I'm sure it was. Anyhow, it was the Beatles there, you know. But, yeah, that was just Saturday nights. And, of course, come the end, on my second tour, I was there with John Goldsworthy. We both got motorbikes and they were geared down, and we went out. We knew my landlady's daughter was at Port Louis, so we used to go weekends on the motorbike out to Port Louis for the weekend.
What were the roads like?
There wasn't the roads.
No roads?
No, it was just like Dartmoor. Yeah. Yeah.
Rough tracks.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Now, of course, they tell me it's all proper rules now.
So, in that first visit to the Falklands, you were being employed by Crown agents.
Yes, but then after a while, they see how you fit in, and then you go for Public Works Department.
Falklands Public Works.
Yeah. And I was lucky that the boss of Public Works Department was a Plymouth man.
Oh, yeah.
And he had 2 sons. So, of course, me coming from Devon as well.
Yeah.
And I fitted in because one was, they're both boys were carpenters. And any of the jobs going, like we went to Fox Bay to build a school. Took it down in Port Stanley, a tin place, and put it all up in. So I went with his son.
You were moving a school, were you?
We moved, well, it was like a tin hut, more or less, here, but they wanted a schoolroom in Fox Bay.
Hmm.
So we went out there and built it, like, you know. And then come towards the end of my 3 years, I went down to South Georgia for a season, building houses down there.
So when, what year were you in South George then?
58, 59? 58, 50,
yeah. Yes, it must have been. Come back to that in just a minute. Were you building houses in Falkland, in Falklands as well?
No, we were repairing. We didn't build much. It was repairs and all that, you know, and anything around government house, we went and done stuff and all that, you know.
But were they were tend to be wooden buildings, did they?
A majority were wooden buildings in corrugated iron roofs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you meet the governor?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Who was it then? Was it
Cosby? No, Harold Smith was the second time.
Don't worry.
No, no.
But I mean, did you meet him formally? Were you interviewed or was it just at socials?
Well, he just knew if you went up there to work, he would, you know.
He was informed?
Yes, oh yes. But I knew some of the, well, one of the girls there, she was a cook up there, you know, so... We used to go up when they had parties up there. Well, myself and several others used to go up in the cook's place and, you know, what was left we had. You know? Yeah.
Well, scraps off the governor's table.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You didn't go to any of the governor's balls or
parties? Oh, no, I wasn't. But there is one of our crowd went, a painter went, but he was a Freemason. And that's how he got in. And he made such a fool of himself. That was the last time.
How do you mean?
He got drunk.
Oh. On free booze?
Free booze. And he jumped out on somebody, one of the women in the corridor, and it didn't go down very well.
No, I'm not surprised. No. Were the Freemasons quite important in the Falklands?
No. He had it all up in his... Because some of them lived in Nizzenuts. And he was in an Isn't living. But he had the thing there, you know.
His apron.
He had a badge of stuff and all there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His regalia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we knew that he was a Freemason because we said, well, that's how you got made foreman of the painters, like, you know. Yeah.
But the island wasn't full of the Freemasons.
Oh, no. Never. No. There might have been some of the big boys at it, but no, never come across it, really.
People say it was a bit like England in the 30s. It was about 20 years behind England.
Yeah, I don't know. I seem to find it all right there, you know.
Did you have electricity?
Oh, yes.
From Jenny's?
Well, we had a power station up the head of the bay.
Oh, right.
Oh, yes. And,
is that coal-fired?
Oil.
Oil fire.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and of course, all our fires repeat when I was there the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, both times actually repeat. You know, you cut your own peat and...
How many carpenters would there be working there? Just you?
Oh, no, no. I think when I went the first time, there must have been half a dozen or more of us. But they all gradually went home after their time, and some were kicked out, as I say.
Mm.
And then...
But there was enough work... I mean, was it about 1,500, 2,000 people?
Oh, yes, yeah.
There was enough work for two or three men, was there?
Oh, easily, yes. Yeah. Easily, yeah. And then, as I say, I was lucky that I went Fox Bay and all that there, you see. And then we spent the whole season down South Georgia building these houses.
Were the Falklands a beautiful place?
Well, I thought it was all right. I enjoyed it. Yes, because I was quite surprised, really, when they had the war there. They were getting minus 20s and all this year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was there all these times and I couldn't remember ever getting down to their temperatures. You know, I used to say to my wife, well, it wasn't like that when I was there, you know.
So in your time at... Port Stanley at Falkland, you actually took time off to go to South Georgia, did you?
No, I was sent down there.
Right. At the end of the Port Stanley time or halfway through?
Part way through. Yes, I had another year or so to do.
And who sent you? The Crown Agency?
No, no. Our boss, there was a Plymouth man.
Yeah.
It was... these houses had to be put up.
Can you remember your boss's name?
Livermore.
Livermore, okay.
Yeah.
And he got word that there was building work to be done on South Georgia.
Yeah, well, he was, I suppose, informed by the Crown agents. Yeah. And I went down. His son come with me. There was a plumber come. He hadn't come then, but he came and went down with us. And there was a mason chap.
Right.
You know.
Stonemason.
Ricky, yeah, he was there. And that was the four of us, you know.
Did he volunteer, in fact, to go? Or you just
Yes, I did, because, you know, more experience.
So that was a big, that was a several days sea trip, wasn't it?
About 4 days, yes.
What did you make of South Georgia when you got there?
Oh, God, it looked terrible.
Really?
Well, it was just coming out of winter, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But, we lived in a jail, actually. There wasn't a jail there, but there was no accommodation, so we lived in a jail while we were there. Yeah, it was all right.
Were they still wailing?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've got the eardrums in the teeth. What I got down there, like, you know.
You still got them here?
Yeah.
From the whales?
Yeah.
What was it like, the plan at that time? Was it a messy place?
What, the...
Where
they were cutting them up? Oh, no, they kept it very, very good. I mean, we were at Great Vicken, the government point.
Yeah.
But we were allowed to go over, walk around and go over and use the slop chest.
The what?
Slop chest, they called it. It was a shop where you could buy anything.
Right.
All the beautiful jumpers, sweets and all the lot, you know.
Paying cash?
Yeah.
English currency?
Yes, it was. Well, Falkland Island currency.
Pound shillings and pence?
Yeah. But the Falkland Islands had their own money at the time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was a cinema going all the time when they were whaling. So, I mean, we went sometimes at night to see it all free and, you know.
And again, you were doing mainly repair work, were you, to the buildings?
No. Brand new.
Brand new houses?
Oh, yes. We had to put the foundations in. And these came from, I remember the firm, Nedham's of Manchester. They all came down like a T&G, but 3 or 4 inches thick.
Tongue and groove.
Yeah, thick. They were 3 or 4 inches thick. And we erected all the houses and you bolted it down through into the concrete bases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite substantial. Was that because of the high winds?
Oh, yes. It was all very good, you know. Yeah. And I always remember that because we boarded it all inside, everything was, it really was good. And I put my name and all that up on one of the houses. And many years later, I came up again and we called in South Georgia. And the diesel mechanic was still the same man that was there when I was there. And he went up to this house and knocked on the door, and a woman answered the door. They allowed women down there with their husbands for Met. And he said, you've often asked them whose name that was.
I see.
And he said, he was a man, you know.
So yeah. how do you put the name up? With pencil?
Yeah, I just put it up with a pencil because it was just up on the ceiling boards, up in the loft, like, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, I expect now. It's still there now because, you know, yeah. But we put 3 houses up down there.
Just the three?
Just the three, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
And were they substantial family homes or little bungalows?
Oh, yes. They were quite decent houses, yeah. If you ever go to South Georgia and sail in on the right-hand side, you see the houses, like, you know.
Did you know who was going to live in them?
No. It was for the Met people, because they was having their wives down, like, you know.
The Met officers?
Yeah.
All right. The Met station.
Because when I was there, there was just an Irish chap. He was brilliant, you know, for forecasting. But there was no women there at all.
When you see pictures of Great Vicken, it's just a jumble of rusting old metal now, isn't it?
Yes.
Was there any sense of that when you were there?
Oh, no. It was fully operational.
Hmm.
Yes.
Did you go to Shackleton's grave?
Oh, yes, I went over there, yes. I've got photographs of it all, like, you know.
What sort of state was it in?
well, it wasn't too bad at the time, but I got a feeling that they did take him up and bury him somewhere else, if I remember.
Right.
And then whether he was brought back again, but I got a nasty feeling. I mean, he's there now, as it is, but I'm sure that he was taken up and it was put, you know, something like that. Because there is a cross up on the hill.
Yeah.
Of him, you know.
As well as the grave.
Yeah. Where he, well, I take it, that's, whether he died there, I don't know at that spot.
Oh, but, I see.
But it's there, and you know, whether it's still there now, because it's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how long were you on South Georgia for?
We spent the 6-7 months there.
Building the three houses?
Yeah.
And then back to Stanley?
Back to Stanley. But I went back to Stanley, but the two lads caught a boat from South Georgia back to England. They didn't come back to Port Stanley. You know, I went back and I had another 6 months or more to work.
You were in South Georgia when the Totten sailed in, is that right?
Yeah, for the Transantarctic.
Yeah.
That was when I was down there.
All right. Yeah. You saw it yourself, did you?
Yeah.
Did you meet any of the people on board?
No, not really, no. But I've got, in my collection somewhere, I've got all the stamps stamped, Transantarctic, South Georgia stamp, the day that finished, like, you know.
Was there quite a lot of people coming and going in South Georgia in those days?
Well, not really, no. It was only just the whaling people there, the ships that were coming in for that, yeah. There was no tourists or nothing like that, you know.
No.
Sometimes we'd have a day off and they would take us over to Stromness and the other places, you know. But the majority of the time we worked 7 days a week, like, you know.
Were there ships calling in on a regular basis?
Well, there was ships coming in there to pick up the guano and all that, you know. Yeah.
Fertilizer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. In fact, I mean, when I went to, when I left Montevideo once, there was a Royal Mail liner, whether she's still there now, but she was sunk in the harbour at, full of guano at, in Montevideo. And they always said it was a swindle. But we never heard
of it. How do you mean?
Well, she went down in the harbour.
Oh, right.
And we heard how you do all this old chit-chat.
Insurance job, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
What was a mail ship doing?
Well, they sold them off, the old Royal Mail lines.
Okay.
And she was, because, I mean, it was quite an expensive cargo then, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
I gather the smell was quite strong.
Well, not too bad. You got used to it, you know, because, I mean, people have said, oh, when you get near South Georgia, you could smell it. But whether it was me, I don't know. But, you know, I got used to it. Yeah.
And then your father passed away and you came home?
No. No, I never come home.
Oh, you didn't come home?
No, I stopped.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was another 3 years more time I come home again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me get my geography right then. What year did your father die?
55, when I went away.
Oh, right, okay.
At the beginning of my tour.
But then you did come home for a bit, the late 50s.
I came home in 58, 59.
Yeah.
And then I went back down to the Antarctic Deception Islands in 1960.
So what did you do with those year and a half or so you had at home?
Well, I worked for some firms, like, you know.
Anybody who'd have you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
But you were itching to go south again, were you?
Well, yes. That's when I saw the advert.
In the Herald.
I thought, right. And unfortunately, when I went for the interview, I was limping because somebody had knocked me off my motorbike. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, there was four carpenters at the time going. Three went to Halle Bay, and I was sent to Deception. And I thought they'll fail me, but they didn't. And I went to Deception, and they went to Halle Bay.
How did you get... this was in 1960...
1960 it was, I think. That's when we left, October 1960.
That'd be the very end of 1960, December sometime.
Well, October we left Southampton. And then we sailed down, you know, and we went Tristan da Cunha. We had a an agricultural minister and his family, and they were going to live in Tristan.
Yeah.
So we sailed into Tristan and spent a week there unloading. And it was very interesting because our ship, the Shackleton, was red. And it was at the time that the Yanks had put the first man up space.
Yeah.
And we were buzzed by the big American planes. We were told afterwards they thought we were Russian because this chap was coming down in the area.
Oh, he was re-entering.
Re-entering, and he was coming down in that area. I forget the name of him, who he was, but...
John Glenn?
Yes, I think it was.
I've met him.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's who it was.
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah. And
first American, not the Gagarin, the Russian.
No, it was American because they buzzed us. And somebody said, well, they think we're a red ship, Russia. But we were at Ascension Islands then, but we still had to go to Tristan.
Yeah.
Which took a couple of days more to get to Tristan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the Shackleton like?
All right. Yes. But we only had about 9 what we called FIDs on board. So we used to steer the ship while the crew done all their work.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And then we used to do the echo sounder because of the bay that they told her what they call a fish behind them.
Yeah.
And we were doing that for echo sounding night times and all, 24 hours a day.
Depth sounding?
Yeah.
What, in the middle of the ocean or along
the coast? Oh, yeah, towing right in the middle of the ocean. Yeah.
Can you remember what sort of figures you were getting?
Not really, but I know one touch it came right up.
Yeah. A ridge.
Yeah, and down. Yeah.
And the first place you were going to go to after Stanley was Deception.
Deception Islands, that's right.
What do you make of that?
Oh, well, of course, we got in November, I think it was, and I thought, well, you know, this is it. Like, you know, I mean, I was keen to get, you know, so we got ashore and then saw where we had to sleep and all this lot. But I quite enjoyed it there.
But you weren't there very long, were you?
I was there all summer.
Oh, you were there all summer? Okay.
Well, I built a diesel shed.
Did you?
Yeah.
Out of wood?
Well, it came down and it was unloaded. It had been there, I think. Whether it was there before I got there, I don't know. But anyhow, we had to... I think it's still there now because I've seen photographs. Mm. It survived the thing.
The eruption.
But we had to dig down through the permafrost to put the piers in for it. And the Shackleton had 2 big diesel engines for us and they were dumped on the beach and we had to get them up over the beach and I had to take a pattern of the bottoms and make the beds of the engines before I'd done anything else.
Mm.
And then there was 2 steel erectors down there, Ben Hodges and another chap, and they rigged up shear legs.
A what?
Shear legs to lift the engines.
Right.
And they lifted them up and dropped them on the things I'd made, and then I could get on with building my hut. Yeah.
Did you get to know Ben Hodges well?
Oh, yes, Ben, yes.
What did you make of him?
Oh, he's all right. But, of course, he, seeing his smokes were free, he started smoking and he's never stopped, I believe. Yeah, old Ben. But who was I talking to? Oh, the gentleman that came to see me or phoned me before you came.
Alan Weirden.
He said that Ben has gone a bit, what do you call it?
Forgetful?
No, what's that they call instead of forgetful?
Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Has he?
Mm.
Well, I interviewed him about 3 years ago now, I would think.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago. He was fine.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, because he came there with another chap. We call him the Reg Account. And they built the hangar for the aircraft. Mm. But they stopped doing that, and then because we couldn't, I know the engines were all assembled. So if it hadn't been there, God knows how we'd have done it. Mm. You know. Yeah.
So you had to get, you and Ben had to get these generators off the beach.
Well, everybody down the on the base, and pilots, the air crews, everybody. And we had a tractor, and we towed them up on rollers all up across till we got to where I'd have built the shed. And then they lifted them up one at a time onto the drop down over.
Yeah. So they were quite substantial generators, were they?
Oh, yeah, big Lidsters.
Yeah.
Real big Lidsters, yes. Yeah, yeah. But it all went well, and I mean, I spent the summer there, really. And I think I would have wintered, actually. But I think a thing came from Hope Bay that they wanted one man for the sledging parties.
Hmm.
So Killenbeck volunteered himself. And they said, no, you're the base commander. So I said, I'll go. So they flew me over.
What was the attraction of going to the...
Well, I just wanted to, while I was down there, try the dog sledging, like, you know.
Yeah.
So I was flown over after all the ships had gone.
Flown over to...
Hope Bay.
Hope Bay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I know who the pilot was there, didn't I? Ron Lord?
Ron Lord, or else it could have been... there was Paddy English there as well at the time. Yeah, one of they was flew me over. I think it must have been Ron Lord, actually, that flew me over.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you were keen to... Were you keen to leave Deception or just keen to see something new?
Well, to see something new
yeah.
while I was there.
How do you compare the base you saw at Deception with the base you saw at Hope Bay?
Oh, well, of course, Hope Bay was a sledging base.
Yeah.
And it was entirely different, you know.
In what way?
Well, everybody was in and out all the time, you know, and you always had the dogs there,
mm-hmm.
the, you know, nearly 100 dogs there.
Was it bigger or smaller than Deception?
I think the hut might have been about this. I think Deception was an old whaler's hut, mm. so that was quite big.
Yeah.
But... we slept in double bunks on Hope Bay, but no, I rather liked Hope Bay, like, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was where you met Golly, John Gould?
No.
No?
No. Sorry. The first time I met Golly was Port Stanley.
On the first occasion? Second occasion?
Second occasion.
Second time,
yeah.
I beg your pardon. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then he went off to Hope Bay at the end of that first summer.
Yes.
On Deception.
Yeah,
and
I wintered at
Hope Bay.
At Hope Bay, and I'd done some sledging. I went out with a geologist
mm-hmm.
the first time, just me and him. And I think we got caught up we camped one night, and everything went out. All the sea ice broke up.
You were camped on the sea ice, were you?
Well, no, yeah. he knew better. We camped yeah. on the land, but we had to go back then because we didn't know how far, and we came back to right. space.
So you couldn't continue the trip because the ice had gone.
And then it was found out that I had house masonry, believe it or not. And I went down the Argentina. There's an Argentine army base next door.
Yeah.
And he gave me something for it. And eventually I went out again with another geologist and a doctor. We were out about, must have been a couple of months, might have been more than that, sledging.
Did it take to that kind of work?
Oh, yes, I liked it.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know, I had a job to ski, mind you. But, I found it, you know, very good. Yes, I rather enjoyed it.
Were you working with the dogs yourself? Were you...
No, because each man had a team, but yeah. I didn't have a team, like, you know. So I was on what they call like a gashan. Yeah.
Can you remember the name of the team of dogs? Doesn't matter if you can.
No, I can't. We had the ladies, but I don't think I went out with the ladies. I can't think.
No,
I can't remember. Because we had several teams there, you know.
So was it they were doing these trips out for geological purposes rather than surveying?
Oh, yes. The second time I went out, we went down to Cape Longan or somewhere, and they found this, like, big hole in the ground and everything, and he took it all, took all the things. I think if I look through my stuff, he sent me a thing of it, you know.
When you say a big hole in the ground?
Well, it was like an ice hole kind of thing, and he was very interested in that.
Right.
It was down somewhere near Cape Longan's.
So he was taking rock samples from this ice hole, was he?
Oh, yeah, and all this stuff. And then, of course, our radio packed up. And we could hear the Morse key, because it was Morse key then, and they couldn't hear us. And we found out come the end that if we'd have been a few more days, they'd have classed us as missing because they couldn't get in touch with us, you know.
So the radios weren't very reliable in those days?
Oh, no. But we went back up again, coming back to base, and Aikenhead, he was called, a geologist. He knew where the dumps were. There's dumps all laid out.
Depots. It was Neil Aikenhead, was it?
Yeah. Neil. And he knew where it was, and we got in touch with him. To say we were still here.
Oh, right. So you found a radio in one of the depots?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
It still worked?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. And, of course, I went out with... there was Dr. Catty and Neil and myself.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Three of us.
There can't have been an awful lot of carpentry work to do at Hope Bay.
No, there wasn't. None at all. But they just wanted a man.
Right.
I'd done little bits and pieces, but I went there especially as what we called Gashan, really, then. Yeah.
I suppose there's always sledges to repair, was it?
Well, no, nothing like that, no. Mm. No, I didn't, might have done a little bit of shelving and stuff, but nothing much. I just worked, you know, done your day at Cook and all this stuff and everything, yeah. Yeah. So, no.
Who was on base with you at Hope Bay?
Neil Fotheringill was the base commander.
Yeah.
We had a diesel mechanic which never left base. George, somebody from Bristol. I can't remember the other lads that was there. But they're still alive, I think, because I've seen their name mentioned in the Bass reunions, like, you know, because I think one of them's in Canada. No, I can't think of their names.
Hold a second, I can look it up for you.
Ah.
Ian Fothergill.
Yes.
Aikenhead, we talked about already.
Yes, and who was the other geologist? Carl went out with him.
Nelson.
Yeah, Nielsen, that's right. I went with him. That's right.
And then... the medical officer was somebody called Catty.
Yes, that's right, Dr. Catty. Yeah, I went out with him. It was me, Neil Aikenhead, and him for the couple of months trip down.
Okay. The diesel mechanic was somebody called White.
Yeah, George White from Bristol.
And then two men, John J. Wyndham.
Yeah.
And R.G. Wright.
Yeah, that's right.
And a couple of surveyors, Edwards and Harbour.
Oh, yes, Harbour, yes.
And somebody called Downham, a GA.
That's right, and he's in Canada now.
Yeah. And then some chap called Collinge, builder.
Me, that's right, yeah.
Did you all get on okay?
Oh, yes. Yeah, got on wonderful.
There was never any bother or...
No problems at all.
No.
There's only been one base where I was at Adelaide in later years. The chap was at so-and-so.
Right.
And... the base commander got him sent home for his second year. He wasn't no good to the base.
Do you remember any extreme weather whilst you were there?
Oh, at Hope Bay?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were... it used to get very windy there. And everybody was off base except me and George White. And of course, we had to feed the dogs that was left every day. And we actually started this particular day to feed them. And the wind got up.
Mm.
And we just had to lie down and the sledge went. You know, because we were pulling it around.
You were off base yourself, were you?
No, no, we were on base, but we were feeding the dogs that were left there, you know.
Are you using a sledge to get the food?
Yeah, out? But yeah. Just pulling it around, like, you know, because yeah. It's around the base up. And anyway, it just disappeared. And we crawled back to the hut. And when we looked at the met gear inside, it had gone up 100 knots.
Gosh, that was quite sudden, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was very windy at Hope Bay.
Did he have any other close calls?
I think once we were at Deception Islands, that's right. We went out in the boats one night. Now, where did we go? I don't know if we went to... No, we must have... Anyway, we were out in the boats and we were coming back to base, several of us in the boat, in one of the Chilean or boats, tugs, came out and nearly run us down. Like, you know, he didn't stop. Whether he didn't see us or what, I don't know. But we thought, oh, crikey, that's another life gone. Like, you know?
In your carpentry work, I mean, normally if you're working in this country as a carpenter,
yeah,
you'd have a foreman who was looking at your work and
yeah.
making sure you're doing a good job. And you had, there's a certain amount of opportunity to show pride in your work.
Yeah.
In the Falklands, and in particular in the Antarctic, you probably didn't have all the tools and the raw materials you'd like. And I wonder whether you were able to maintain pride in your work.
Oh, yes. Yes. All the huts came down.
Prefabs, were they?
No, it wasn't prefabs. It was all in bits.
Right.
But it had all been made sure it was there. And... the hut, I put a, when I went to Stonington, I'd have made a diesel shed in Port Stanley for Stonington, so I knew that was all right.
So you made it, put it together, and then taking it apart again.
Taking it apart again, that was for Stonington Island.
Hmm.
But the one at Deception was massive, you know, and it really was massive, like, you know. And I've done most of that myself, like, you know, yeah.
And so when you were building the houses on South Georgia, would that have been from scratch or would that also be kits, if you like?
It was kits.
Yeah.
But we had to put the foundations in.
Yeah.
And put everything as it should be, you know, for... Because you put the bolts right down through and everything. And when it was what you call second fix... They had the electricity was what they called an octopus system. It was put, a big box with all the wires on, was put up in the loft. And each wire was named and it came down through the partitions.
Right.
And it was all the boy Livermore, he'd done it all and wired it all up. So, you know.
So you were proud of the houses. You could have lived in one yourself.
Oh, yeah, it was very good. It was very good, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. They had always had good stuff down the Antarctic.
Yeah. How well built was the hut at Hope Bay? Because you must have cast a professional eye over it,
I
guess.
Yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it was... we had big wires over them to keep it down from the wind.
Hawsers?
Yeah.
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 But the woodwork was okay, was it?
Oh, yes, carpentry? Everything was... Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most of the work... I mean, nowadays, they got firms down there doing it.
Mm.
Which is a shame, really, because, you know, we done it all before.
At the end of your year at Hope Bay...
Yeah.
Were you offered a second year, or did they have to make a decision?
No. The funny thing was that... we had a radio message from the governor of the Falkland Islands, Arrowsmith, he was called. And he said that when you come back, Collins, come to see me. So when I went back to Port Stanley, he offered me another 3 years working for Public Works Department. And that's when I met Golly.
So you just had the 1 year in the Antarctic as such?
Well, I had the first time I went down for what they call a winter and two summers.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Port Stanley for another 3.5 years. That's when I met Golly.
Yeah. And then went back south again after that?
Yes. Well, okay. It was, that's right. Yeah.
So I've got a note here from John Galsworthy about meeting you. He says, I first met John in late 62 and you worked together quite a bit and you were known as the Two Johns.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, we were always out together at night.
Oh, I see.
We played in the darts, played badminton, and if we ever went out drinking sometimes, you know, if they saw one, they'd think, where's the other one? And they used to, one of the girls used to run dances there.
Yeah.
So we always run the cloakrooms, you know. And then there was all the theatre stuff. The Workmen's Club had a fancy dress ball every year. And we'd done all the scenery and all this stuff. It was always me and John, you know. Yeah.
Did you do any acting? Or was it just?
Oh, I didn't do any acting, but the Met people were very good at it. Mm.
So yeah. You made the senior for the Dramatic Society.
Oh yes.
And we, from time to time, we also helped a group called the Five Bs, running dances. That's
yes,
when we were
cloakroom
attendants.
Yeah.
And John, that's you, was a very keen ballroom dancer.
Yes. Yeah, I had all my medals.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you were involved. So were the dances every week?
Not every week, no. Sometimes, if it was a ship in, they might have one.
Hmm.
But usually it was just the big dances every so many during the winter, like, you know? Like the beauty queen or whatever you called her and all this stuff. And then and eventually I got treasurer of the Workmen's Club. So that landed with me for all the time I was there, like, you know. And it's surprising, just for a little small place, what money we turned over. Yeah.
What were you raising money for?
Just to keep the place going, our working man's club and all that, yeah. Yeah.
Mm. We played badminton.
Oh, yes.
In the same town hall?
No, in the gym.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, the town hall we used for the dancing, but there was a gym alongside it. Where we played badminton.
Yeah, and darts. That was in the pubs, I guess.
That was in the pubs, yeah.
Working men's darts team.
Yes, yes.
Did you win much?
No. I had good nights out, but, you know, yeah.
Remind John about setting an alarm clock for 300 hours under a bed. Don and Phil's bed.
Oh, can't remember that.
Can't you?
No.
Sounds like a practical joke.
Yeah, it must have been, yeah.
Also, apple pieing a young lady's bed whilst working in her parents' house.
Sound oh! Like? Oh, Elaine. I expect, yeah, Elaine. Yeah, I was keen on Elaine.
Were you?
Yes.
So you were showing your affection by apple pieing her bed, were you?
Yeah, I was. Well, she eventually came back to England. But, I was very... I got on well with mother and father, like, you know, yeah, Elaine, yeah.
Remind me of the winter with Iona and Eileen.
Yes, he went with Iona and I went with Eileen.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
We drank too much.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Whatever happened to them?
I think they both went to Australia.
They were that keen on you, they went to Australia.
Well, no, it was a thing that we were company for each other in the winter. And when the ships come in, they used to hang around with the Navy,
you know.
But they could drink us under the table. They honestly could.
Is that what Falkland girls were like, were it?
Well, these two were. Yeah. Yeah.
When the time came to leave Stanley after 3.5 years, we stood on the Darwin and said with real feeling, we bet there have not been two blokes so sorry to leave.
Yeah.
So yes. What was it about the Falklands that made you feel so at home there?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was a freedom of everything, you know, and you knew everybody knew everybody, and it was it was a good way of life for us, like, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, we'd done our work, and we had a foreman. We had a one toucher. We had a man that was he'd have worked with natives, you know.
Who?
He was the that might be my wife just coming in. He came as superintendent of the public works. And he'd have been out in Africa working.
Mm.
So he still had that attitude that we were blacks, you know? And of course, well, that's what he was thinking. And myself and John and the foreman, we were sent out to Ajax Bay. That's where the Falklands landed when they had the war. The hospital was at Ajax Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We were sent out there to take all the houses and everything down to bring back to Port Stanley.
For raw materials?
Yeah, took them all down, marked it all, and we erected them back in Port Stanley. And he was a right so-and-so. And anyway, we were up there working, me and John and the labourer, and he come up and he ranted and raved that, you two so-and-so, he said, apprentice could do more than you two. So anyway, we took John away, and I stuck my heels in, and I got a labourer to help me. And then we always got all the dirty jobs, myself for John. We re-ironed the whole aircraft hangar in the winter, you know.
Right.
Should have done it in the summer, but we done it in the winter. He was a right little fellow.
did you not, being quite a qualified carpenter by then, did you not mind doing other less skillful work?
No, that was all part of it. The roofs were all part of it, you see. I mean, the big skull there, we'd done all that with felt roof and tiles.
Yeah.
So that was all part of our job. You know, everything was, there was no demarcation out there.
Right, you all mucked in.
You all mucked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so after 3.5 years, what happened? Did John Galsworthy go north and you went south? Is that right?
No, I came home.
Oh, you came home?
Yes. I came home. John went up on the boat and he went up with the missionaries in Argentina.
That's right. Yeah.
And I went back to England because I was coming back to get married in the Falklands.
That sounds Irish to me.
Well, I flew back to England.
Yeah.
And
to pick up the wife?
No, the wife was a Falkland girl.
Oh, right. I see.
So I was coming back. I had my job secured.
Yeah.
Coming back to the Falklands.
So right. So if you're going to marry, what's your wife's name?
She was called the girl, not this one, another one.
Previous wife.
Yeah. Well, I didn't marry her, but...
Oh, you didn't?
No. I got... Everything was arranged. We had the house, everything. I dug my peat. When I come back to England, got the deer drawn, didn't I?
Oh, no.
So I had to go back because I had to sign the contract.
For the next year's work?
Well, for the next 3.5 years.
Oh, right.
So I went back to the Falklands and... they all knew everybody's business there.
Yeah.
And Ted Clapp was the boss of the Bass in Stanley. And I resigned my work from the Public Works Department. And Ted took me on for the Antarctic again.
Right. So were you joining the Foreign Legion, so to speak, to forget?
Well, not really, because, I mean, she was a bit of a... doings, as it turned out, but you know,
There's one thing I forgot to ask you about Stanley before we go back down south.
Yeah.
There was an Argentinian aircraft landing one day.
Yes.
Tell me the story as you know it.
Well, we were all... It was around dinner time. Prior to that, there had been an American four-engine plane come over, mm-hmm. which was very unusual. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this was dinner time-ish. And I think we might have been going home for dinner. And this plane came down very low. And we all said, that'll never land. And of course, it landed on our race course. It sunk right in. So immediately, some people went up. And they opened my door and took him as hostage.
What year would this be, roughly?
Oh, when I went down the second time.
Early 60s.
John was there as well.
Early 60s.
Yes, John was there.
So they took them out of the plane?
They put them in the plane because the leader of the revolt, as I called it, was a blonde girl. She was in, you know, and the plane was full, but she was... They was all armed. And every man, there was a little Marine garrison there, but every man was given a rifle, including myself, John, and we formed a ring around the plane.
So who was in the plane? This is a group of terrorists, was it? Or?
Yeah. Mm. That, I think that was the start of trying to do the invasion, actually, years ago, like, you know, just to try it out. But anyhow, we ring the plane.
Yeah.
For, well, night and day it was.
How long?
And they said that if they come outside the ring, shoot them to kill them. They told us.
So a group landed this plane on the race course.
Yeah.
How many of them?
I think there must have been about 20 odd.
All right.
And eventually, they must have talked them out of it, and they surrendered. You know. And I think the Argentine ships or something come in and took them away.
So do you think they were representing the Argentinian government, or were they rebellious?
Well, it was to do when they were representing Perón, but he was dead then, wasn't he, you see? He was dead. And that's what it was, you know. But they took them away, and we all said, well, they'll never get this plane to take off. But they stripped her out. And she took off. So I think they used to say, well, when it all happened years later, some of them said, well, that could have been a trial run, like, you know. Yeah.
Were any shots fired?
No, no shots were fired at all.
Right.
But we were all
was it
had
tense?
Ammunition.
Was it tense?
Huh?
Was it tense?
Oh, yes, yes. Because, you know. Mm. Oh, yes. But... No, it was. I've got a photograph somewhere where it's all laid out around the plane, like all the 303s, the Enfields. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's pause for a moment. We'll come back.
Yeah.